There was a brutal directness about his methods which made evasion difficult. I must still make play and wait for a better opening. It had seemed simple enough at a distance. Oh, my Irish wits, could they not help me now, when I needed help so sorely? He transfixed me with two sharp, steely eyes.
"Come, come," he rumbled.
"I am, of course, a mere student," said I, with a fatuous smile. "Hardly more, I might say, than an earnest inquirer. At the same time, it seemed to me that you were a little severe upon Weissman in this matter. Has not the general evidence since that date tended to, well, to strengthen his position?"
"What evidence?"
He spoke with a menacing calm.
"Well, of course, I am aware that there is not any what you might call definite evidence. I alluded merely to the trend of modern thought and the general scientific point of view, if I might so express it."
He leaned forward with great earnestness.
"I suppose you are aware," said he, checking off points upon his fingers, "that the cranial index is a constant factor?"
"Naturally," said I.
"And that telegony is still sub judice?"
"Undoubtedly."
"And that the germplasm is different from the parthenogenetic egg?"
"Why, surely," I cried, and gloried in my own audacity.
"But what does that prove?"
he asked, in a gentle, persuasive voice.
"Ah, what indeed?" I murmured. "What does it prove?"
"Shall I tell you?"
he cooed.
"Pray do."
"It proves," he roared, with a sudden blast of fury, "that you are the damnedest impostor in London, a vile, crawling journalist who has no more science than he has decency in his composition."
He had sprung to his feet with a mad rage in his eyes. Even at that moment of tension, I found time for amazement at the discovery that he was quite a short man, his head not higher than my shoulder. A stunted Hercules, whose tremendous vitality had all run to depth, breadth, and brain.